with our meeting.
My name is Danny Mutimele, the chairperson of the portfolio committee, and I expect the same to happen from my right hand side onwards.
I'm David Mannion, I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee on Defence and Military Affairs.
Lekuba Chet Toro, local committee.
I'm Caroline Pitzer from PMG. Apologies, it's Caroline Pitzer from PMG.
Robin Normley from PMG.
Herman Schmidt from State Law Advisors.
Lucano Tralata from SABC.
Stevenson from Bourne News.
Colonel Colin Doyle from the CNVO, past chairman.
Indimis Kotana, Minister of Defense.
Tavisora Tsumo from the Minister of Defense.
Brigadier General Pacha Mushiane, the Department of Military Veterans.
Kiran Tsulo, Department of Military Veterans.
Department of Military Veterans.
I want to thank the department also for honoring this invitation. We do not have any other matter on the agenda except a presentation by the Department on Military Veterans Bill. And we also have a tabling of outstanding information. We do not have any announcement, honorable members and members of the department. Now we are going to ask the department to go straight on and make the presentation.
Thank you very much, honorable chair, honorable members. I will take the committee through the presentation on the Military Veterans Bill. Just quickly, by way of background, this bill comes before the committee following the appearance that we had with the committee last year when we presented the report of the Military Veterans Ministerial Task Team on Military Veterans. In terms of the bill itself, the current introduction and background, that is the scope, will cover current legislative framework and the situation. Within that context, the rest of other legislation that has a direct impact on military veterans, having lifted only those three, the Military Veterans Affairs Act of 1999, the Military Pensions Act of 1976 and later amended, and the Social Assistance Act, etc. With respect to the bill that is before us, the main elements of the Military Veterans Bill, the focus areas thereof are the first element, and then secondly, the long title and definitions, and then the benefits and services that accrue to military veterans in terms of the way the bill has been structured, and then the eligibility for benefits, and then military veterans advisory board, as well as military veterans appeal board. Now, the task team, still by way of background, before we get into the substance of the bill itself, the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans established a task team ministerial task team led by the Honorable Deputy Minister of Defense and Military Veterans following the inauguration of the new administration. And of course, that was in the context of the President having reconfigured the Ministry of Defense to become the Ministry of Defense and Military Veterans. And the mandate of that task team was firstly to develop policy recommendations that would serve as a framework for management of military veterans affairs in South Africa. Secondly, to recommend policy on benefits for support to military veterans and the associated institutional structures that are required to deliver on the envisaged policy. And thirdly, to advise on the appropriateness or otherwise of the current legislation after evaluating the current situation or status quo as it pertains to military veterans. The outcome of the ministerial task team on military veterans was to recommend a number of steps, key of which was that the current Military Veterans Affairs Act of 1999 needed to be overhauled so that there is an enablement of enhanced legislative protection of military veterans and their dependents. Furthermore, and the committee will note, pursuant to having tabled the report, that the military veterans bill that we were deliberating on is drafted in line with the recommendations of the task team. The focus areas of the bill itself touch on, firstly, the plight of military veterans. Secondly, the legislative protection of military veterans. Third, a determination of the entitlement and benefits of military veterans. And to mention only a few, and that's in Section 5 of the bill itself, housing, healthcare systems, educational opportunities, business opportunities, pension, and transport subsidies. The bill also recognizes the Military Veterans Association, the South African National Military Veterans Association, legislative. Furthermore, the long title of the bill has been substituted. This is against the background that the current legislation, which is the Military Veterans Affairs Act of 1999, the substitution of the title in this bill is simply the Military Veterans Bill, which will hopefully, once you've enacted, will become the Military Veterans Act. And then with respect to the old and the new, this current bill has a new definition or expanded definition of a military veteran over and above what they pertained before in the Military Veterans Affairs Act of 1999. And then this bill sets out various benefits in their administration, specifically, which is a departure from what the 1999 piece of legislation had. With respect to eligibility, the bill widens the provisions on eligibility and also imposes certain restrictions as well. And then furthermore, on establishment of an appeal board, this is now included in the bill. And then the bill furthermore sets out the functions of the Department of Military Veterans. Now, this is a new development because at the time of the Military Veterans Affairs Act of 1999, there was no Department of Military Veterans. But whatever administration for military veterans resided within the Department of Defense in a directorate under the Human Resources Division. The bill furthermore sets out what are the benefits and entitlements for military veterans, which is a substitution of an earlier provision in the Military Veterans Affairs Act of 1999, which spoke of development programs to be put in place. And furthermore, finally, provides for matters incidental to that. The objects of the bill, Honorable Chair and members, are to provide, one, for the benefits and entitlements to military veterans and their dependents, and to determine the eligibility of military veterans. Secondly, for the President to be Patron-in-Chief of all military veterans. This is a provision that is carried from the 1999 piece of legislation, and it's also carried in this bill, with the President being Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces, with respect to military veterans as a continuum from Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces, because military veterans are no longer in the Armed Forces. The President is then designated as the Patron-in-Chief of all military veterans. And then, thirdly, the objects of the bill are to establish an advisory council and an appeal board. The functions of an advisory council will be to advise the Minister of Defense and military veterans on matters related to military veterans, any and all matters related to military veterans. The advisory council will be made up of 10 persons, three of which will be directly nominated by the military veterans associations themselves. And then separately, an appeal board. An appeal board will, as we'll see the detail later, but the aim of setting up an appeal board is to appeal any decision that may have been made which a military veteran may feel is prejudicing them, and to then it has that good power. Furthermore, the fourth element, the bill seeks to provide for certain functions of the department and for the development and implementation of policy, and also matters incidental. Now, in terms of the definitions as set out in the bill, the definition of a military veteran, this definition is drawn from the Ministerial Task Team on Military Veterans, and has been expanded from the 1999 Military Veterans Affairs Act. And in terms of the definition that is in the current bill, a military veteran means any South African who rendered service to any of the military organizations, whether those organizations were statutory or non-statutory, which were involved in all, on all sides of South Africa's liberation war from 1960 to 1994, or before that served in the Union Defense Force before 1961, or became members of the new SANDF after 1994. The emphasis there on new members became members of the new SANDF after 1994 is against the background that since 1994 to date, there are members who served in the armed forces who no longer serve in the armed forces. So they are also entitled and are military veterans as well, and have completed military training and no longer perform military service or not been dishonorably discharged from that military organization. Which means that, to go back, that with respect to became members of the new SANDF after 1994, which means that in the years to come, there will be more and more military veterans who will have served in the SANDF as the years go on. In terms of the benefits and services, this is expanded on and reflected in Section 5.1A of the bill. And these benefits are just to leave them compensation for injuries, counseling and treatment, sadly honoring and memorializing fallen military veterans, and then provide for the education, training, and skills development of military veterans, facilitation of employment placement for military veterans, facilitation of or advice on business opportunities for military veterans, and then the subsidization or provisioning of public transport for military veterans, a pension for military veterans, access to health care for military veterans, and housing. Those are the 10 listed benefits relating to military veterans in Section 5.1A of the bill. In terms of eligibility, honorable members, on eligibility, military veterans will be subjected to a means test, that is with respect to the receipt of any of the benefits or all of the benefits that have been listed. This means that simply being a military veteran does not necessarily entitle you to access such a benefit, hence the principle of a means test that has been introduced in the bill. This is also a provision that was carried from the recommendations of the Ministerial Task Team on Military Veterans. Furthermore, on eligibility still, dependents would be eligible only if a military veteran has a legal obligation to support such dependents as listed. On the Advisory Council, the bill establishes the Military Veterans Advisory Council. As indicated earlier, the Advisory Council is appointed by the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans. That appointment will be a culmination of a process where the Director General of the Department of Military Veterans will have invited military veterans organizations to submit nominations for the appointment of board members, and then, of course, the minister appoints such members from the list of recommended nominees as submitted. And then, separately, the appeal board established in terms of Section 20, once again here, it is the minister who has the ultimate power to appoint members of the appeal board and also designate a chairperson from those after consultation with the Military Veterans Association, SAMVA. The board will consider any appeal that is lodged by a military veteran against any decision by an official in terms of this act, which decision may that may have an adverse effect on the rights of military veterans. Furthermore, the board may confirm the decision or set it aside or vary such a relevant decision or even substitute any other decision or provide the required legal advice. Now, as a penultimate point, this this bill, Military Veterans Bill 1-2011, repeals or seeks to repeal the Military Veterans Affairs Act, that is Act 17 of 1999. We conclude that, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, can we get comments, points of clarity from Honorable Members? Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Chair, and to the DG for the presentation. The thing that concerns me about our deliberations on the bill is it strikes me that we're once again in danger of legislating in a vacuum. Now, if one looks at the memorandum, if one looks at the bill, and then if one also looks at the Military Veterans Task Team report, nowhere in those reports is there any reference to how many military veterans there actually are, how many dependents there are, or at least what the estimated numbers are. So that's one issue. So my sharp question there is, how many military veterans are there, or what is your estimate of the number of potential beneficiaries? So that's the first question. The second question that concerns me is, my understanding of the rule is that the bill, in terms of the National Assembly Rule 243, the bill must, in terms of 243(1)(c) Roman 1, must give an account of the financial implications of the bill for the state. And it strikes me that that has in fact not been done. Moreover, in terms of the PFMA, Section 35, unfunded mandate, draft national legislation that assigns an additional function or power or imposes any other obligation on a provincial government must, in a memorandum that must be introduced in Parliament with that legislation, give a projection of the financial implications of that function, power, or obligation to the province. It seems to me that the departments have not done their homework and have not complied with the National Assembly rule or the PFMA rule. In other words, this bill has not been costed, and I think that we need an explanation as to why. The third issue, Chair, and I would
would recommend to you that perhaps we get a legal opinion on this matter. This bill, I believe, has been incorrectly tagged. It's been tagged as a Section 75 bill, which is a bill that does not affect provinces, whereas it seems to me that the bill should have been tagged as a Section 76 bill, as a bill that does affect provinces. And simply because the primary delivery departments, particularly in respect of health, in respect of transport, and particularly in respect of housing, will be provincial departments. And I think that we need to take a legal opinion from the Parliament's legal advisor on whether this bill has perhaps not been incorrectly tagged. So my first concern is I'm concerned that the department has not done their homework. How many military veterans are there, or what are your best estimates? The bill has not been costed in contravention of the National Assembly rules and in contravention of the PFMA, and I'm concerned that it has been introduced, that it has been incorrectly tagged. Chair, I have other questions, but let me leave it at that for now.
Dr. Tolo.
Thanks very much,
Commissioner. You know, I remember your voice 1 year. More than that, you know, all of them say, how many our member of the military veterans? We must know. You know, we just talk about military veterans, how many of them? We don't know. And if we are talking about something vital for military veterans, just talking, take off top. But I think today they will explain us how many in number. Because why are we say this, Comrade Chairperson? Because we know there is some problem. We'll find our money, department money, pay somebody who is not a member of military veterans. We know the corruption is there. You know, that's why we want to know. And at the same time, we know all the freedom fighters, MK, KDAS, APLA, we know those people, and others. Then we will see to look. Is the right people who can benefit on this, our department. Now, another thing, Comrade Chairperson, I'm asking, they're talking about entitlement and the benefit on page 5. Housing, health care, system, education, opportunity, business, opportunities, and pension, transport. What kind of transport? I just found out on transport. They are going to buy a car for them, or they are going to give them a voucher to use the public transport with that voucher. I just found out, maybe if you can explain us on that. Thank you very much, Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I quite agree with the Honourable Mynheer. I can't believe that we have to deal with a bill and the cost implications hasn't been done. I mean, it's totally unacceptable. And according to the rules, as far as I'm concerned, we cannot continue with this bill. We can stop the process just here. Because we have to know what the implications are going to be. I mean, if we just continue and it becomes an act, we just tell Treasury, it doesn't matter whether you've got the money or not, now it is an act and we must just pay. It is totally unacceptable. So as far as I'm concerned, Chairperson, that I would suggest that we stop the bill just there, that the departments go and do their homework, and that they come up with a cost estimator. And furthermore, I would like to know, why do you say we were involved on all sides of the South African Liberation War? Why is it a Liberation War? I was not in a Liberation War, but I qualify according to the definition. And then I also would like to know, you're talking about a means test, to be subjected to the means test. Maybe I've missed it in the poll. What is the means test? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Well, I want to comment on a number of issues, but of course I elect to comment on just one issue on page 12. Bullet point number 2, the CG invites military veterans organizations to submit nominations for the appointment of board members. Well, the invitation of military veterans associations. As a matter of fact, I don't know why the Defense and Military Veterans Department continues to sabotage PAC through a parallel structure, that they go on supporting it, inviting it to official locations. Just last year, towards the end of last year, the president, who is also the commander-in-chief, invited a rival PAC, or ABLA, Military Veterans Association, and these people, they stay with audacity that there is nowhere where the bona fide PAC sanctioned Military Veterans Association is going to be recognized by the government. And of course, when you tally what they are saying with the recent utterances by the commander-in-chief and the state president, that those who are aligned to the opposition are actually hell-bound, then they tally, because the bona fide PAC sanctioned ABLA Military Veterans Association is not recognized, and the DG was there when the police were set on the minimum charter, and they were not allowed to sit in the meeting. And not long ago, I read to you a fax which emanated from Luthuli House, whereby the PAC was being taken to court. Now, really for me, I wonder if my presence here is even valid, because the president on one side says the MK Military Veterans Association is a component structure of the ANC, and in Polokwane they were granted a league status, but the same standards are not applying to the PAC. Now, I hate really to discuss politics in a forum where we should discuss defense and military veterans issues, but this is the reality, that the PAC is being sabotaged by an organ that is recognized by this government, and these people are given a lot of money to establish PAC rival branches, regions, provinces, etc. So maybe, of course, this is part of the hell that is being created on earth for the PAC. Thank you.
Can we get the response from the department?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. With respect to the question that Honorable Member Manir has asked about how many military veterans are in place, which is also a question asked by Honorable Member Tolo. At the moment, with respect to what we have on our database, confirmed and verified, 67,500 military veterans, that is confirmed and verified as such. Over and above that, we do have a list that is in our possession, which we are continuously processing to confirm and verify the bona fides of such applications as submitted recognition as military veterans. It should be noted that the matter of verification or confirmation of a member or members as military veterans is for us a critical aspect, because it is against that we will be able to disperse the benefits once approved. But also, we are also cognizant of the reality that some genuine bona fide military veterans were not over the years captured in terms of being on a system or on the database of the military veterans department, or even then when it was in the Department of Defense. So that is another process that we're also dealing with in association with or in collaboration with the Military Veterans Association, all of them across the board. So that is where we stand. I cannot give the figures with respect to dependents at this stage, but for now, with respect to the benefits as indicated, the top priority is with respect to the military veterans themselves. Now, in terms of the matter of the bill not being aligned to Rule 243 of Parliamentary Procedures or Section 35 of the PFMA, a point has been made in the bill itself, in the objects of the bill. If you see at the page 14, paragraph 4, where it is indicated that the financial implications, we do expect that there will certainly be financial implications, but we are in engagement with other departments of state where it is their line function and mandate to deliver to military veterans. In fact, if honorable members recall, the ministerial task team report did indicate that work streams will be established, or even engagements with line function departments with respect to delivery for military veterans in those respective areas. So it means that the budget will not necessarily come from the Military Veterans Department or Ministry of Defense, but once concluded the costing with the respective line function departments, then to enter into service level agreement for the delivery of those benefits to the military veterans. That is the context. With respect to transport that the Honorable Member Tolo has asked about how the conceptualization here, and as discussed and recommended in the ministerial task team, and now also drawn into the bill with respect to transport, that refers purely to public transport. And once we've concluded also in the work streams with the transport department, we'll then get to a determination of a subsidization of military veterans for them to be transported on public transport throughout the country, wherever they may be. The question by Honorable Member Groenewald on the cost implications, I think, covers that, which is the same question that Honorable Manir has asked. On the definition, the definition is all-encompassing and has actually been expanded over and above the previous bill or the Military Veterans Affairs Act of 1999 definition. So it covers all who are involved in South Africa. If we want to go right back, First World War, Second World War, the Korean War, and then the wars after 1960. Yes, because that existed and it was recognized as such. The United Nations did. Even this South Africa, the Constitution did recognize that. Hence, there was the process of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. On the matter of the means test, Honorable Chair, the means test, once again, to reiterate, simply being a military veteran does not necessarily automatically qualify a person to have access to the benefits as listed here. And I don't want to make examples of persons, but without mentioning any names, if, for instance, I am a minister of state, or I'm a senior public official, or I am in business, or whatever, and I was a military veteran. I cannot then come up and say I need to be assisted by the state to obtain housing, for instance, or to have access to health care, or to be assisted with transport because I'm a military veteran. I said, or to be assisted with the education, training, and development. So that is a principle which was also taken from, even in the context of social development, the social development department. Whenever they have to disburse a benefit, they do undertake the process to determine does this claimant or person who comes forward and makes a claim for a benefit that the state will provide, are they really and truly persons in the state that they claim to be? And it is only after such an assessment that then there's a process to assist with access. So the means test as referred here is within that same spirit as already practiced. The matter that the Honorable Member Mpatlele has indicated, the Department of Military Veterans is not supporting affection or sabotaging any organization. We cooperate and collaborate with all organizations of military veterans, all of them, including the umbrella body, but mainly through the umbrella body that we collaborate with them. Whatever services or benefits or monies that are expended on state monies are accounted for, and the books are there and open for all to see. I conclude that.
Thank you very much. Do we have any other questions of the Honorable Nadal?
I don't know whether to speak as MP or to speak as an MP. I fully agree with the Honorable Member Funeral. That definition is really problematic in the way that it's crafted, and I can understand where he comes from when he wants to distance himself from the liberation war. Because in that liberation war there was an aggressor, and there was a victim. And APLA and MC, by the way, were the victims. So I think we really need to look at this definition. Because the definition will also take us forward in terms of how we deal with the problem. Because having gone through the reports as well of the task team on military veterans, the costing could very well be derived from the problem statement itself. And if the problem statement is flawed and gives out very pertinent issues that arise from time to time and experienced by the various military veterans and the costing would be flawed. So I think at some point we need to revisit the problem statement so that it can then help us in our financial planning, or even in terms of policy development. Once we start with a problem statement that is done, then it peters out and makes the whole thing a little less relevant. Because the problem statement should look at quite a number of things, including that which could have been termed as honorable discharge. Because I can sit here and safely say, without a shadow of doubt, that there were people that were expelled from the SANCF not because of dishonorable conduct, but for many other things, including discrimination. And I think the advisory council should take those matters into account, because that's what the other issue that I was going to come to. That what cases would be brought before the advisory council? Those that have prescribed by law, could the advisory council then look into them? Because I can say here that a lot of MK cadres were very badly treated by their very own MK commanders in the SANCF. And I think that some of the truths that we need to deal with when we deal with the issue of military veterans. People sit in offices, people sit in parliament, they don't experience what we experience on the ground with military veterans and their families. that are beyond the description of their issues. And again, it comes back to the issue of the problem statement and the definition. I think that really needs to be revisited so that we can then be able to look at the matters from a more informed perspective. But as we do that, it's good to bring in experts, but bring in the military veterans themselves to us. The CPR in itself is flawed. I know of many people that are trained within Angola that do not appear in the CPR. So you cannot base your planning and your costing on a CPR that is flawed. I sit as a Secretary General of MKMVA, where I sit. But I've never received a letter from this department to say, could you assist with the establishment of a database? I've not received. I don't know whether the provincial person has received next to me here also in the NGO. But I mean, some of those things that create the problems when it comes to issue of planning. The database, the verification process, let's cost that. Let's do that properly. So that we can bring in people that are bona fide members of this association and weed out those that could have come into the city afterwards. Because then it's then disadvantaged. Still on the problem statement, the status quo per category of military veterans, perhaps by age, perhaps by generation, because then if you do that, you are then able to say this particular age group or this particular generation needs this kind of intervention, needs this kind of assistance, then you can be able to plan effective on the basis of the needs that will come out of that. The magnitude of the situation. It is just thousands of people need. So you will find a younger generation that is still employable, that is still trainable, that you can still take to school and, you know, assist. But we're talking here of people that were involved in military battles in Kapuso, in the Northern Front, in the Eastern Front. People who are scarred by war, who might not even have the aptitude or even have the psyche to deal with their own demons and therefore need extra assistance from the state. So that even if you put them in a job, they can't keep a job. They go into relationships, they can't even keep a marriage because of the scars of war where people do not get the kind of assistance that they require. So that's the kind of planning that needs to come into effect so that you can adequately cost what it is that it is. Think you have to look at in terms of the cost of this bill. I've spoken about the CPR, which then speaks to the number of recipients of this bill. There were other issues that had come out of, and unfortunately, Chairperson, we're not discussing the report, but there are recommendations that would speak to the bill that come from the report. On business opportunities, we don't all come on an equal footing as military veterans in Sudan. There are those that have benefited. How do we disaggregate that and ensure that people receive assistance from the state like the others have received before them, so that others don't get more benefits while others feel left behind? Unless you can allow me to come back at some point. But in certain Pashele, I also agree with some of the matters that you made, and I fully agree with the response of the DG. But I think let's let the military veterans work on the issue. Because even with us as the ANC, we also have those problems. There are those who want to join COPE, but we can't stop them from benefiting as the ANC. It's going to be very difficult for us to do that. With an NK as well, that is not a D, but an association, an autonomous body within the African National. I just would say to the note case, if you can allow me something to come back on the recommendation.
Right, Honorable Kitana.
Then,
note my worry that some of the arguments, though they are intended to help the process, actually could be to the detriment. I mean, the point is military veterans need assistance, and not just now. They need housing, they need health facilities. And by the way, I don't think the debate is starting to be. This issue of military veterans, I know in our branches in the age, it has been long-standing. I mean, years and years they've been raising their issues there. So the point is, I don't think it helps since I know somebody in Angola, if you know him, submitting to the list, let him be checked out. But the point is, there must be a broad framework from where we start. I mean, any bill, any act, in some instances, we amend with time because reality on the ground as a process unfolds dictates. But there must be a starting point. If you don't start any people debating, it will take another 10 years. And these people are suffering. They might even die in the process without getting the benefit that they need. If they don't get health facilities now, houses now, I mean, we're exposing them to a very, very bad and inhuman life. So now I'm arguing that we should support the bill. I mean, take the definition, for example. You say on both sides of the liberation. I mean, the point is we are where we are because two bodies came and negotiated. The liberation was there, supported by United Nations, and they came up during negotiation and the negotiation with both sides of the forces. So if they say both sides of the liberation force, they mean those that supported the liberation force is one side and those that opposed it is another side. Both are covered. Now, this is the point. If you keep on debating about that type of a definition, you're not going to conclude because we know why we are on both sides of the liberation forces. Those that were on the side of the previous regime and those that are on the side of the new democracy are on both sides of the liberation process. I mean, the liberation struggle, and which was accepted internationally through United Nations. Now, I'm just afraid that if you want to drag on the definition, we talk about people who are suffering. And definition can be easily academic. Now, my own opinion is that the broad frameworks are there. Let's accept them, carry on. With time, if changes need to be made, we can amend. But the start must be made, and people must start benefiting now. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kekana, Honorable Mania, Honorable
thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Fulu. Can I go ahead? Thank you, Chair. In terms of process, I think, I mean, it's clear to me that the department has not done their homework, and for that reason, I think that we should stop the process here. And what we need is two pieces of work done. We need a legal opinion from Parliament's law advisor on the tagging of the bill, and if necessary, the bill will have to be sent back to the relevant committee to re-tag the bill. Secondly, we need the department to run, to cost the bill, and obviously they will have to make assumptions in that respect, but the bill needs to be costed so that we as legislators are aware of the financial implications of this bill, and of course in that memorandum the department concedes that that there are extensive financial implications. We need to know what they are. So I believe in terms of process, Chair, we need to stop the process now, pending a legal opinion on the tagging of the bill and pending receiving a detailed costing of the bill. So that's my comment in respect of process. Then I'd like to come to the question of corruption. I mean, and I think the DG has alluded to this. This bill, I think, and this issue, there's a real risk of massive corruption in this department. And reading between the lines, I think the department themselves are concerned about this. Clearly, One of the challenges is going to be verification. What criteria are going to be used to verify that a person is indeed a legitimate military veteran? That aspect I know the department has already been working on. But the second point that concerns me, Chair, is this question of business opportunities and tenders. Now, if you look at page 18 of the Military Veterans Task Team report, there is reference in paragraph 8.10.3 under principles of best practice. There's the suggestion that tenders will be reserved for military veterans. Now, you'll recall on the 1st of September last year, I asked the Minister, was there any prospect of tenders being reserved for military veterans? And the Minister gave an unequivocal undertaking that it was not on the table, and yet this is now in the report. I'd like to know from the DG, this is one of the possible, if you like, benefits that is being considered by the department, because not only do I believe that that will be economically inefficient, there is a massive risk of corruption if we start to allocate tenders to military veterans. My last point, Chair, and I think this goes to my first point about process. I think the department has been let down by the military veterans task team. I think in terms of our process as we go forward with this bill, we need to see the military veterans task team. And what they need to explain is, how is it that they spent more than a year working on a report that cost, and I want to underline this, 855,000 rand to produce, and they produced this, which could have been written, frankly, in 2 weeks. There's no primary research, there's no costing, there's no reference even to the existing research of military veterans. I think that that committee needs to appear before us and explain how it is that they produced this report. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I want to come back to the means test, and I want more explanation. But by the way, I still differ on the liberation. Whether the United Nations recognizes it or not, this is South Africa. What I want to say is that, Chairperson, if I understand Mr. Matupi correctly, he said that the means test, can you just put that in there? I can't look like that. It looks right in the eye. Thank you. You're going to use the means test that's like similar to social services which they use. Now, if I understand it correctly, they're going to look at what is a person's income, what are the assets, and according to that, they will determine whether a person qualifies or not, if I understand it correctly. Now, Jefferson, if I look at clause 5 of the bill, and I want to apply the means test, then I must be very honest with you, it's very vague. Because let's say, at this moment, for instance, I know that the means test for pension or for a monthly payment is that the income, if you married, must not exceed about, say, 65,000 rand annually. If you're single, it must not exceed an income of about, I think it is 50,000. That is the test at the moment. But then you get a monthly payment from the government. But if I look at this, so if you qualify, then you're going to receive some housing, you're going to receive access to health care, you're going to receive a subsidization to public transport, education, training, skills development. That is not what is happening to the people who qualify according to the means test in social services. If you qualify in social services, you only get that monthly payment. But if you add all these together, then we're going to talk about quite a lot of money. If you say that we are talking about 57,500 veterans at the moment, if you apply the definition, I can assure you it's going to be much, much more than 57,500 people. So if you qualify according to the means test, how are you going to determine as far as health care? Because, I mean, if you take a citizen of South Africa today who's poor, he or she does not have an income qualifying for a subsidy from the government or social welfare. If they want medical services, they can go to the hospitals. They don't receive an extra medical payment from the department to have access to medical treatment. They have it already. They can go to any government hospital. Why do we make the distinction here, but we apply the means test as like in social services? Thank you.
Thanks very much, Comrade Shepherdson. It's not a question, but it's a comment. The point raised from Comrade Kekana to say, if we know some other people, we must try to get their names and submit their names. Because I'm a rural man. We've got our comrades, the freedom fighters, and in the rural area, they don't know, they're just drinking alcohol day and night. They are so frustrated and so on. You know, I remember Jefferson, there was some other gentleman, always I'm talking about that man. There was a M.K. Kader in Kukule, somewhere here in Kailicha. And there were criminals, taxi drivers, using him to be a hit squad. I'm talking to you now, he's in prison for life sentence. You know, if you think twice, that man, he's done a good job for us in South Africa, but because we didn't look after them, that's why they have committed another crime. And if I was a president, I can say we must just forgive that man, because truly speaking, there is the people who were fighting for us, and when they come back, and in municipality, there is a job there where we can give those comrades to get something to eat, but now he's in prison for life sentence. Was outside in the bush, and he didn't even merit, I'm sure. And when he come back, now some people are using him to kill the people and so on and so on. He's in prison for life sentence. So those kind of things we must look into. According to me, on that gentleman, feel painful. We must look. I'm not the president, but I just think those kind of people, when we say we give parole quick, those kind of people, I think they're very important, because and they will do a good job for us. And yeah, so just comment, Comrade Shepherdson. But I know this gentleman, Comrade Shepherdson, Simela, you know, he didn't even have a chance to marry on time because he was in bush, and that is good. And if the others are still, where I'm saying, there is the old man of the Pan-Africanist Congress, that man, it was a part of Mapla. Let me tell you, he died, but his wife and children, they are suffering like animals. But the point is from Comrade Kekana, then we will try to see the name and then maybe submit. And then to try to help those people who can help them. Thank you very much,
Anderson. Thank you, Dr. Tolo. Any other comments, Mohaba?
Thanks, Chair. I thought maybe you're ignoring me. Well, point of correction, teaching, it is not true that you treat APLA equally. And Honorable Dodo is saying APLA and MK were victims in the past. A point of correction, APLA is still
a victim of double standards.
Now, let me cite this irrefutable fact. You know that it was broadcast all over that we had two PAC, one led by Tamika Blakey, whose deputy was Dudu Palmer, and another one, according to the media report, was led by me. That one went on to be PAM, and the military, APLA Military Veterans Association, that your department, that this government is recognizing, is the one of Dudu Palmer. And all of them, the people that you are recognizing, are not PAC members. When there was election in the Eastern Cape, the one that you attended, and the Deputy Minister of Defense and Military Veterans was there as well, all the people who were elected purportedly to represent APLA in the provincial SANDRA are category members of PEM. Now, for Honorable Dodo to say they are tolerant, they are tolerant towards COVID members. Now, here you are comparing the incomparable. The APLA MVA that you are recognizing, Honorable Dodo, that you share a table with, actually are members of PEM. And no wonder, when Tamika Blakey went public, he said, had he won, had he succeeded to lead PAC, he was going to merge it into the ANC. But now, after he had failed, a section of the PAC that you are so welcome, that you are so warm towards, and you recognize them as APLA MVA. And this is a double standard. Because in the MK, for you to be a MK MVA, you must be an ANC category member. But with us, the people who are sabotaging PAC every step of the way, who are members of PEM, who are non-PAC members, are representing us there. Then where is justice? And DG, of course, if you are blind to these facts that I'm giving you, then I don't know what you are going to see. Because these are the facts. All these people that are with you there, you hardly see those faces at PAC gatherings. And you don't even question why. Thank you.
Mazia, you come after.
Thank you, Chair. Now, I want to say it's quite clear that we've got a new liberation war going on between APLA and MK in any way. So, Chairperson, I want to put it quite clearly. I'm not against the fact that we have to look at our military veterans. It's important. Military veterans play a very important role at this stage, and we must look after their welfare. But then we must do it in a very responsible way. And I want to make a further, pose a further question. Can the DG explain to us, and I want that everybody has clarity about that, with the integration of the forces, with the statutory and the non-statutory forces in the mid-90s, there were quite clear categories, people qualified, and they had an option whether they want to continue in the new defense force or not. Compensation were paid out at that stage. I know that a person like Tony Yengeni, although he was a member of parliament, received quite a lot of money at that stage because he was also part of the non-statutory forces and everything. Now, which category of people are we talking about here? Because the people who joined, I mean, you have your normal pension benefits if you're a member of the SANDF, if you get your retirement time and everything like that. So what category of people do we talk about here? Because if we want to be fair and just, then I've got a problem. For instance, why APLA was not included into that? What happened there with those definitions? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Mazia. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I personally have been trying to grasp with the deliberations. You can't get
then
it is your mic, it's not myself, Chairperson. I'm saying I've been trying to grasp with the deliberations. And the more that I listen, is the more that I realize that possibly we need a break for a proper consultation in our own study groups, and also for the department to can respond properly in some of the things that have been raised here. And I'm not sure if I will be in order to request, Chairperson, that we break and we come back after a week and see if we can have answers to some of the questions that have been raised, and also ourselves that we can possibly have a proper approach on all the issues that are being presented here by different members and parties. Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to get the facts right. I saved the Constitution from the
fact. We'll come back to the, your issue, Mazia. Now, I think we must give the department an opportunity to respond on issues that they can respond to. Then we'll come to that issue, that proposal that was raised by Honorable Mazia.
Thanks again, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I think in dealing with this issue of the means test, there has to be a recognition that people and groups of people are not the same, and they are not moving from the same starting line, or even finishing line, if you want to put it that way. And exactly the example that Honorable Member Funeval is making, that there are people in the Defence Force and that they contribute to pensions and
you
all of that.
I think we can all hear you. Are you talking to yourself or to all of us? If you could raise your voice, please.
Yes. No, we'll do that.
Thank you.
Just to say again, I was saying at the beginning that the matter of the means test that the Honorable Member Khunewald is raising is real, because people are not the same as groups of people, as individuals, and we're not all moving from the same starting line or even the finishing line together. And in exactly the example that the Honorable Member has made of the fact that but there are people in the Defence Force who contribute to a pension or who contributed to a pension and so on before they became military veterans. In the same breath, people who would have been side by side with those ones who did integrate and made a contribution to a pension, there are those large numbers of them who did not integrate into the Defence Force and therefore did not have an opportunity to contribute to that pension. And even have any other form of occupation or a job. But then even of those who did integrate, there are still equally large numbers whose pensions are not sufficient. And it is within that context that there is a process to revisit pensions of members who served in the South African National Defence Force. I'm just using that from a means test point of view. So if you then undertake a means test, you will not want to equalize a person who has been in the system, say for 30 or 40 years, made a contribution for 30 or 40 years of pension, with somebody who has equally been for 30 or 40 years either in the struggle and did not make a contribution to a pension, or the state made such a contribution to them. So it's within that context that we need to look at it. And also similarly, on the question that's been asked about health, but why, I mean, there are health facilities that government is providing. The fact is that some military veterans are receiving health care from a military health institution, but the greater number of military veterans are not accessing such health care facilities. And it is not by default that the health care was identified as...
They don't have access to the military?
Yes, yes. But they are military veterans. So it was not by default that one of the recommendations that the task team has made was that the military veterans should have access to health care in military health facilities. Of course, ideally, if the Department of Military Veterans was a one-stop shop, like you would have, for instance, in the United States, military veterans have their own military hospital, exclusively for military veterans, not even for serving members. That's a different category that also has its own facilities. Similarly with whatever business opportunities and so on. So their own that are specific to them. So we are seeking to create a dispensation for military veterans that enjoins all of government, not just government, but also all of society, to make a contribution in ensuring that military veterans are recognized for the role that they've played in their country and continue to play. And even future generations of military veterans that they will continue to play. The problem that we're seized with now may not be as acute in the next 20, 30 years. But the reality, as Honorable Member Kekana said, is that that is what we're facing now. And it is a matter that would need to be dealt with government having taken the giant step of establishing a fully-fledged department to do this, to coordinate and harmonize all matters with respect to military veterans. It is in that context that what this bill seeks to achieve with respect to deliver to military veterans. On the matter that the Honorable Member Patel has raised, it is a difficult issue that we are grappling with, because military veterans are a historic factor, and whatever their allegiances in the past and then later on change to other allegiances does not remove the factor of them being military veterans. So we are dealing with that particular situation. And we are not a political department. We are a bureaucracy that has been established, and we seek to act within what the law says and whatever parliament will promulgate and so on, and we'll act within that in a non-partisan manner. The question that the Honorable Member is raising about integration, that there were clear categories, people who qualified and so on. Yes, there were clear categories of those who chose not to integrate and receive the demob, but there are those who did not even integrate or demobilize, and they therefore fall at the bottom of the ladder because they had not integrated or demobilized for one reason or another. In some cases, people were not in the country at the time. In some cases, information did not filter through. not necessarily, but just across the board. And in some cases, information did not filter through and so on. Even as Parliament beyond 1994 kept extending the process of integration until the passage of the legislation, the Termination of Integration Act, was then passed. It had also been extended more than once to try as much as possible to cater for those members who may not have integrated, or because integration has now stopped, have not had an opportunity to demobilize. So we are still faced with dealing with some of those problems of that period. Of course, at the moment, we do continue to verify so on in collaboration with the organizations, and there's a whole process that we undertake to verify military veteran status. With those who did integrate or demob, it's very easy because they entered the system, they either got employed or they received a demobilization package. So it's easy to pick up on the part. Those who did not, that is where the challenge is. And we even get to a process of even interviewing people, cross-checking references and all of that. It's not that I'll come in today, submit my application, and then I was not or never on the system, I will therefore then be in. Which is why earlier on we're saying that in addition to the confirmed and verified list, there's another separate list that we continue on a daily basis to go back, re-examine, check, consult with them, with the organizations of the military veterans, and then once we've got that and seek service certificates of the members and so on, and only then enter into the database. So that is the context. I'll rest here.
Thank you, Dumi. We need to round up this matter.
Chair, I do agree with the Honourable Member's view that we do need to sort of pull up the handbrake and get clarity on the tagging and clarity on the costing. Just a quick follow-up question in terms of the numbers of the veterans. You said you were working with...
I want to hear you, David, because I want to respond to what you are saying.
I'll raise Please. My voice. Can you hear me now, sir?
I don't know. Talk. We'll tell you if we can hear
you. I can see the Honourable Members had a good Christmas and a good break.
Forget about Christmas. Make your point. Sorry, Mr. Chairperson.
When we were dealing with the numbers of military veterans, you said you were working, just correct me if I'm wrong, with the database of 37,500, but there was then an additional list. How long is that list? How many names are on that list?
No, Honourable Denny, can
Chair, my major argument is that we can argue about, because this is too involved, this thing of military veteran. Now, I'm saying it's either we make a start and some people start benefiting immediately, the 57,000 at least has been, is there, we are all sure about them. You know, a plan can be there and they can get something, and all other remaining problems will be sorted out with time, because the point is, I mean, the issue of the tech now, it has been explained that military is a national thing, competency, and according to line functions, other ministries will help, education, health, transport, and so on. That makes sense to me. Now, if you must sit here and debate about tax, I really don't think it really helps veterans, because that's a matter that can be administratively sorted out. I mean, he's worried, the way I understand, according to the way resources will be allocated. But it has been explained that military can go to provinces because it's a national competency, but other ministries and departments will be involved according to line function of whatever resource. Now, I still emphasize that if, like Mazia's proposed, we go back, maybe we should give ourselves a deadline this time. February must not come to an end before this building passed. But for me, I'm happy at least there's a target of 57,000, and I'm sure that gives us an idea how many people will be costing. And from there, the process will unfold. Otherwise, the poor guys are going to die while we are all seated here debating the finishing September.
A follow-up, Mania. Thank you, Chair. The Honourable Member, of course, is quite wrong. There would be, the department has been grappling with, and the military task team have been working for more than a year. They should have done their homework, and the department should have come here prepared today. Just on a follow-up, I asked you, DG, about the additional list. Also, you didn't clarify the position on tenders.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. In terms of how many names additional to the list, we're talking about less than 20,000. That's not a static figure, because as I said earlier, on a daily basis we continue to get applications for people to submit. Others are just immediate because it's quickly verifiable. Sometimes, for instance, a member may come to have a form filled in. They fill in the form and the details, and then once we go through to check, we find that no, this person actually demobilized. So immediately it means that they are on the certified personnel register. It's easy. We just confirm that, and we proceed with that. It moves out of that status of the other list that is not on the verified database. And then others, then, I mean, you just look at the details, some are obviously dubious, and then have to put aside. But we are enjoined by law to process every application that is submitted before then we get to that process of verifying it. On the matter that the Honorable Member has raised on paragraph 8.10.3 of the task team report, And if I may just quickly read that for that part of that's 8.10.3 of the task team report falls under a section on business opportunities for military veterans, and it says clearly that through the benchmarking exercise of the task team, it was established that a range of business support mechanisms are provided to military veterans with varying levels of institutionalization. These include business training and ongoing support, provision of business loans, procurement of land and other production inputs, as well as setting aside a portion of tenders for military veterans by the state and its agencies. This benefit has also been offered by other established military veterans businesses in outsourcing. Honorable Chair, that is the case internationally. It's not a new thing at all. It is something that continues to happen. And it is not simply on the basis of being a military veteran, but on the basis of the ability to deliver on what is being sought as a service or a good to be provided to the state or any of its entities or any other business, for instance. So that is the principle behind it. I'm saying it's an international practice, and again, it might sound like a bad example to call the United States. There are many, many military veteran companies that are owned and run by military veterans in the United States with the support of the state. That is the intention that we seek to have even in South Africa. It will be within the existing legislative and regulatory framework, but it's something that we would want to have put in place. On the matter of the costing again, we are engaging with National Treasury on this matter of costing. We're engaging National Treasury to assist us with the costing, But we are also engaging even outside of government, and the results of that we will bring forth once we are ready. But it is not like there is nothing that is being done to determine a costing of this. I think I should stop there.
DG, do you agree with honourable members that some of the matters raised here should not be processed immediately? You can attend to others immediately, but some of them need further processing. Do you is that your position also?
Honourable Chair, yes, we agree. However, we would not want that the bill is delayed at all. In terms of some of the matters being processed, for instance, with respect to the delivery of benefits, the bill enjoins us to develop a priority of those categories of the benefits. We have done that, and in fact, one of the key priorities that we have set is that of healthcare. And within that context, at the beginning of December 2010, the minister approved that military veterans will have access to military health facilities. Military veterans of 60 years and above on an automatic basis, immediate, and then military veterans below that age who are chronically ill or with disease that we have that. And all in all, that at the moment brings to a total of about 2,000 of the military veterans. That is happening as we speak across the length and breadth of the country using the existing military health facilities, whether 1 mil, 2 mil, in Cape Town, 3 mil, the area military health facilities in the outlying area. So that is something that is already happening. That has been costed and so on, but we are continuously refining that because even as there has been that approval, we do find military veterans, genuine bona fide military veterans, who should be qualifying, who are not on the system, and we will continue to do that.
Comrade Mlange, I've given you an amnesty. You can talk.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. Comrade Chairperson. Sorry for my voice. I don't know what happened to you. Perhaps I smoked too much. And I think the DG is doing very well. He has answered almost all the questions which have been raised here. In my opinion, very satisfactory. There may be one or two points where it needs to be refined later on and so on and so forth. But I want to agree with him fully that we cannot delay the discussion or even the passing of this bill only because proper costing has not been done or that and that has not been done. That's not right. We have been told that there are so many comrade veterans who are suffering, not like ourselves. There are 16 comfortable positions there. There are those people who cannot even have access to medical treatment because they don't have the means. And those are the people we should be thinking of, comrades. Let us not unnecessarily delay the discussion. Passing of the bill will do all the necessary corrections during the course of our discussion from all sides. But to say no, let's leave the bill as it is now, simply because there's been no costing, I call it. That's all. Thank you.
Honorable Member, we, from our deliberations, we all agree that there are military veterans, and the plight of military veterans need to
need to be attended to as a matter of urgency. We also agree that what we are dealing with today is a broader framework, the starting point, as Honorable Kekana said. And as a committee, as a portfolio committee of Parliament, our task and our responsibility is to lead this process and empower instead of stalling it. Now, the department agrees that there are matters that they can give responses immediately, and there are matters maybe that they can give responses later. But as our veteran says there, I don't think those are matters that can stop the process from going on. I think that is our agreement. Everybody has got that interest in that. Now, what should happen according to the process? The next step is that the portfolio committee will call for public hearings, hear evidence from members of the public, and then have submissions. I think that those are the people that we are more concerned about than ourselves. I think that is the route that we must take. Mania?
Chair, I'm also sympathetic to your view that there are military members out there who are in desperate circumstances and do need assistance. I think everybody across parties are sympathetic to that point of view. But we cannot get round the Constitution and the rules of Parliament and the PFMA. We have to determine whether this is a 76 or a 75 bill, and the department must comply with the rules of Parliament and with the PFMA. It's not the legislature's fault that the department are not prepared, and the military veterans are not in difficulty because the legislature are delaying the bill. The military veterans are in their situation because the department have not done their homework. The solution is for the department to burn the midnight oil, catch up, provide us with the proper information, comply with the rules so that we can get cracking.
Honorable Mazia, you had a suggestion earlier.
Yeah, Chairman, I want to reinstate that suggestion because it will allow us to consult both on the areas that Honorable Mayor is raising, and also in order for us to be able can come up with a process that is also going to look at the areas that you are raising. And hence we say, Chairperson, we think that if we postpone this discussion until next week Tuesday, and next week Tuesday, all these other areas, in my view, they will be covered, because the work that has taken place in terms of preparing this bill have taken place for quite a very extensive period of time. And for the few areas that have been raised and which are not in place now, I think 2-3 days will be enough for us to cover those areas. And also from the parties as well, we will be able to also understand some of the issues that have been raised by other parties. And by next week Tuesday, we will then round off and the process of the advertisement will then take place, because we can't also go and advertise when there are still shady areas that we ourselves are not able to deal with. But once those areas have been refined, and we are all in the same page, and you then advertise for public hearing. Obviously, would have covered many areas. And I'm not sure, Chairperson, because this is an amendment to an existing act. Whether does it suggest that the process stops all other work that is being conducted in terms of veterans, or does it say that the old act will still continue to operate in ensuring that people are able to come on board to cover also the areas that have been raised by Honorable Groenewald in terms of the database and so forth? Because I have got no doubt, Chairperson, that there are many people who are not in the database. I am personally not on the internet, and I know that if you can go to all the walls of this building, there is no one who will say to you that, no, this man, we don't know him. They will all tell you that we know this man, but we don't know why he's not in the database. And I have got my own reasons myself. Now, to argue that you will be adding numbers that don't exist, I think it is untrue, and those areas we cannot argue here, and we cannot argue today, but we will only argue once after public hearings have taken place. We know what are the views of the communities and other organizations outside, and then we will be taking our deliberations informed by those submissions. And then some of the areas that even Honorable Manier is raising are areas that we can argue, but we don't think it is the correct time for us to argue those things, because we don't even know what is the response of interested parties around this bill. So, Chairperson, I plead to you and the committee that we suspend these discussions around the bill until next week Tuesday, if it is allowed. And if it is allowed, the department must also commit that some of the areas which are the cornerstone of the bill will be attended to, and then we proceed.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mazia. My understanding is that the processes that are existing already should continue, and the suggestion here, Honorable Members, is that we adjourn until next Tuesday to give the department a chance to go and process outstanding matters, and then we'll take it up from there. I don't think that is some sort of stalling the process, but what I want to get from the department is that do you think it's a sufficient time for you to adjourn from today until next week?
Not fully. But we can come back with some of the costing. Some cognizant that these rights, there is a caveat also in the constitution that any rights will be subject to the availability of resources. So even if progressively we look at each area of beneficiation, the issue of availability of resources is paramount. For instance, I mean, when there was a determination, notwithstanding that healthcare has been put as one of the priorities, that's why the minister said only that specific category of 60 and above and below 60, those that are in chronic situations and so on. So even as with the other areas, or progressively over time, there will be that determination. In fact, it's just that it has been uncoordinated in the past. Provinces and some municipalities, and even some government departments, are actually delivering some service or other to military people. But what we seek to do now that there is a Department of State that is in place is to have full visibility of that ensure that the actual beneficiaries, genuine bona fide military veterans, benefit from all of those, and to be able to harmonize all of that effort, so that at the end of period we can be able to say X number of military veterans during this past period had access to health or access to housing and so on.
But DG, I say, will you have sufficient time from today until Tuesday? Can we agree on that one? Okay. Members, I take it the suggestion has been taken. What are our pending issues, members?
Yes, Chairperson, I'm not sure, but I think that the department when questions were raised.
Can you warn me?
Yeah, and say that the department when questions were raised, because questions were raised by members, they were taking notes. Now, based on that, we think that the areas that are areas of contention are areas that we did not have sufficient presentation to convince other parties that yes, we have to proceed with the thing. If it was with the ANC, of course, we are so desperate that this bill should go through, and that our members should begin to benefit, and that some of these things that have been raised here, in the process of time, they will be attended to. But we don't want to take that route. The route that we want to take is the route where we want to make sure that it is to the satisfactory of all parties that we are approaching this bill in the correct way. And Chairperson, for us to get to then begin to identify those areas, it will be creating another platform for us to begin to entertain the media.
Thank you very much, Maria.
I put the suggestion just in terms of homework being done. My request to you, Chair, was that the Parliamentary Law Advisor give us an opinion on the tagging of the bill.
For us to, as a department, to adequately prepare for next, we need to know which are those issues which the honourable members of Parliament are not satisfied. If, say, for an example, an issue has been raised as a definition problem, what is it that we must attend to?
Okay. And the will also. Consulting with the secretary, will also send a formal letter to the department on those matters. Now, that brings us to the end of this agenda item until next week, Tuesday. And our next item does not need any deliberation.
Thank you for tabling those outstanding documents from the department and from Arms Corps. If I recall correctly, there is one document missing from the Auditor General. The Auditor General undertook to give us detailed information in respect of irregular expenditure identified in last year's annual report. That information has not been tabled, and I wonder if you could just simply look into that. Thank you.
We'll look into that. Right. Now, the outstanding information will be provided to members, and will decide in the next meeting as to how we deal with this matter. And then this brings us to the end of our meeting. Thank you very much, DG, and yourself. And thank you, honorable members, and better. Thank you very much.